tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 13th of August, 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. It's Thursday, which is Geopolitical Analysis Day here at Radio Albion, and that means that we have Radio Albion's resident geopolitical analyst with us today, and that is Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from RussJournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I do have a small announcement. I don't know if I've made it before, but my revision of my book on the ritual murder of the Russian royal family is completed. Amazon is forcing me to use another account for royalties for some godforsaken reason, which is the only thing that's delaying it. There were so many terrible errors in that. It mostly formatting things. It's a little bit embarrassing. And this second edition is going to have a totally different cover, everything else, but it's going to be the same content put in a much more professional way. And I do apologize to readers. It was when I saw the hard copy for the first time, some of the stuff was my fault, some of it was not. And but I take responsibility for all of it. So it's a great little book, and dealing with the context of the murder of the royal family. And the ritual aspects of it in the Ipatiev house.
I didn't know you'd actually written one on the killing of the Tsar. Is this quite an old book then, is it? Like 10, 20 years old, something like that?
Well, here's the problem. One of the reasons that there's so many errors in it is that I was rushing to get it out on the actual anniversary, the day. And I did do that, the eve of. And I paid for it. I wanted to get it out on the anniversary. I did a show on it. People who aren't normally listeners to us, I've seen have the book. I think it would be much bigger if there weren't so many problems with it. It's great detail. It's only 100 pages, so it's inexpensive. But in terms of the ritual aspects of it, the social context, it goes into great detail. I'm very proud of it. As of right now,
so it's a revised edition. So it's got better editing. But did you add any parts to it? Is it updated? Did you add any extra chapters to it or anything like that?
I've added additional content in a few places, but no additional chapters. The section on Rasputin has been expanded because he's a big part of all of this. The introduction and conclusion have been substantially updated. The section on the Russian economy is okay. The section on the actual ritual nature of the murder is okay. So yes, there is I would say substantial additions to it, and put in a much more professional way.
And it's specifically to do with the ritual nature of the killing.
Yeah, and the ritual nature, you know, I did it on the 100th anniversary, so it was 2018, rushing to get it done on the actual day, by the actual day, and I did. And in my rush, I overlooked a few things, and the content is perfect. I love the content, but the format sometimes had some problems with it, so that's all been fixed. And as soon as I get the financial aspect with Amazon settled, so stupid, I'll put it out.
So it's not actually available to purchase just yet because of some technical difficulties with Amazon.
It's going to be a second edition, so it's not a new book, but it's an updated book. And once I get the financial stuff done with Amazon, it'll be done. That'll be in a couple of days.
Oh, excellent. I look forward to reading it, Matt. Well, today we're not going to be talking about the Russian royal family. Today we're going to be talking about the Japanese economy, and in particular, the Japanese yen nightmare of 2026. And for our notes, we're using globalresearch.ca. The George Soros Fund management apologist, Scott Bessent, wants the US to reignite the Bretton Woods system to manage the dollar's continued decline. The Bretton Woods system was abolished by Nixon in 1971 as it was tagged to the value of gold. But America's gold reserve vaults are likely completely empty. Such a revelation would have the effect of an immediate collapse of the economy internally and globally, initiating a sell-off of treasuries to scrape 10 cents on the dollar. The sell-off of treasuries would collapse every agency within the federal government within 24 hours. It would also liquefy Social Security and Medicare. Japan, holding the largest share of treasuries, would be the first casualty spiraling into a graveyard. The dominoes would then destroy those countries with the highest value of treasuries and the lowest reserves of gold: the United Kingdom, Belgium, and Canada. A global implosion of fake wealth. China has somewhat mitigated this catastrophic economic peril by buying gold continually for years, while the UK, Belgium, and Canada have openly depleted theirs, holding zero reserves. Only Italy matches China's stated holdings at 2.4 tons. If Trump is attempting to re-establish reserves via Venezuela, the time frame is past due. It is more likely Venezuela's reserves are being forwarded to Trump's personal bank account, given that they do not appear on any treasury balance sheet. So, I mean, what it's telling us here is this Soros apologist, he wants to go back to Bretton Woods. The Bretton Woods system was with gold here. Effectively, everything was pegged to gold. But how important is this apologist for George Soros? Does he work for the Donald Trump government, for instance, Matt? Do you know?
Well, he's the Secretary of the Treasury, and he as a much younger man, worked for the George Soros Fund. He had many jobs, not necessarily as an economist. He's not an economist, but he seems to be absolutely clueless. There is no gold at Fort Knox. There's pieces of paper that say that there's, you know, this is, you know, that represent gold. There's no actual gold there. I forget when it was maybe 20 years ago, the Germans asked for their gold back, and the U.S. said no, because there is no gold there. Their gold is gone. Any country that you can't have this level of debt and have any gold left. And by tagged, you know, he means it was tied to, associated with the value of gold. So you can't have it if, and he doesn't know that. So Japanese are the largest foreign holder of U.S. government debt. Remember, we used to talk about China and Russia dumping their portion of the American debt on the market and collapsing the economy. Well, Japan was asked to rebuy them again, and they can't keep doing that. As of right now, they're the largest foreign holder of U.S. government debt, and they're liquidating this, I think it's $1 trillion treasury portfolio to raise American dollars. And then Tokyo would then use those proceeds to buy back Japanese yen on the open market, thereby defending its currency against severe depreciation. That's what's going on here. We're used to thinking of Japan as this very powerful economy. It doesn't appear that way anymore. The oil shock, you know, they get a huge portion of their oil from the Middle East and the Persian Gulf. Their prices have been going up steadily anyway. Their debt, their national debt, is 200% of GDP. I knew it was high. I didn't know it was that high. In other words, they owe far more than the country's worth in terms of assets. So they are, you know, and if Japan collapses, then everyone doing a lot of business with them is going to suffer. So this is a serious matter, and no one's talking about it. That's kind of one of the things we do here. We talk about things a little bit on the technical side that either nationalists, conservatives really aren't really talked about very much. Even Paul Craig Roberts hasn't spoken of this yet, even though this is a few weeks old. Now, this last sentence here, grabbing Venezuela's reserves, if that's true, that he just put it in his pocket, that's a serious matter. I don't know if that's true. I don't know how much gold Venezuela had. I don't know if he took it or where it ended up. But if that's even partially true, that's a serious crime.
Just going back to the gold that's supposedly at Fort Knox. I mean, I'm not an economist. I don't know much about this, but I do know that there's supposed to be no gold in Fort Knox. There's no gold left there. So why would the man responsible for the treasury be suggesting pegging the American dollar to gold that's not going to be there, if that means that they will have to officially look for it and then say, oh, well, we haven't got any, and then that's going to crash Japan's economy? I mean, it doesn't seem to make sense that he would do something like that. Am I getting something wrong here, or is that literally what's going on?
No, you're not getting anything wrong. Donald Trump has been awful in maybe, you know, RFK Jr. maybe was a good choice, but his advisors and secretaries, cabinet ministers have been awful. And he's another one. God, he should have got Paul Craig Roberts in there. That's what he used to do for Reagan. So it's one of two things. Either he honestly doesn't know that there's no gold there. You know, people who think the U.S. is this, you know, industrialized economy that dominates the world, they can't wrap their brains around the fact there's no gold there. Or he thinks that the pieces of paper that say gold on them, it's the same thing as having gold, which that might actually be the case. But that's not actually gold. It's a piece of paper.
Could there be another choice, that he's deliberately trying to crash the Japanese economy and crash the American economy as well? Is that a possible option?
I don't know. Well, that's a pretty extreme. You mean Trump or Besant or
Besant? Besant, could he be trying to like crash the global economy? For
that, this is
reason?
I
mean, is there a motive?
Yeah, Trump deliberately brought him on to do that?
No, I mean, could he just be wanting to crash the economy, whether it's to do with Trump or not? But I mean, could that be a possible motive here? Because, I mean, why would you do something so stupid otherwise? If you know you know that it's likely to crash the economy if he does that. And if they're taking steps to artificially back Japan up, then they know that there's a chance it could crash the economy. So it just doesn't make any sense to me. And I'm just wondering, could that actually be an ulterior motive there, trying to crash Japan's economy and cause the dollar to crash? Maybe bring in a new currency, a new global currency, digital currency.
It is more than conceivable, especially where he came from. He was trained for a while by the Soros institutions. A lot of people are, as we know, a lot of elites are, and that may have twisted his mind to this extent. I wouldn't think that Donald Trump would be in on that, but some of his cabinet people might be. Whether it be BlackRock, might also have a part of it. You know, BlackRock is a heck of a lot more powerful than George Soros. They're all the wealthy. You know, there's a small group of super trillionaires. Families, BlackRock cult, the Rothschilds, etc. George Soros is just one guy. His holdings are fairly small compared to BlackRock. I wouldn't say Trump is in on it, but being trained by some of these people, that is definitely conceivable. Sure.
Getting back to the notes here. How are a country's gold reserves determined? The figure relies nearly 100% on what any country's government declares, as opposed to any literal validity or audit. Given the last audit conducted by the United States was completed around 1984, it is increasingly doubtful, given the deficit, the CIA use of gold to pay mercenaries and trafficking expenses, and the liberal use of lies, the validation of the US statement on reserves has any connection to reality. In order for Bessant's Bretton Woods proposal to be initiated, physical external audits would be necessitated. Bessant's first job was with Saudi Arabia's Alayan Group, despite zero financial proficiency. Thereafter, he joined a Greek fund before being called to second base by Soros, as they manipulated the British pound and made billions shorting the collapse of the British pound, dubbed Black Wednesday. The Bank of Japan is sounding the alarm that Bessant and the Japanese government, led by Sanae Takashi, who took office in 2025 and has vowed her absolute devotion to Trump, are going to collapse Japan's economy and wipe out all savings to save US treasuries from being sold. Japan's finance minister claims Bessant and Takashi have taken over the bank and are trying to force him to buy Japanese treasuries, which he, Yuko, claims will be a financial catastrophe and completely destroy the currency, causing all savings accounts to disappear in the melee as the yen spirals. Yuko claims this is a hostile takeover of Japan, and the entire world is about to be negatively impacted as the petrodollar loses its place as the apparatus for global trade and is replaced by the yuan and crypto. Iran and China planned the demise using the strait as bait. Trump took the bait. Bessant is pushing gold without knowing if our vaults are empty. Japan has been desperately selling off US treasuries, as has China, Taiwan, Luxembourg, India, Canada, UAE, and Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia also cut all oil exports to the United States as of July. So the allegation here is that the Japanese Prime Minister is in on this, effectively.
Yeah.
But the Bank of Japan is sounding the alarm. I mean, I would have thought the Bank of Japan was sort of working with the government. Are they pitting themselves against the government? Is the Bank of Japan setting itself up in opposition to its own prime minister? And it says that Japan's finance minister is claiming they're trying to take over the bank. I mean, surely he's part of the same government that Takashi is. It seems like they've got some internal divisions here in the Japanese government as well. Is that right?
Factions, even in the same administration, even in the same party. You've seen that many times in the past. But let me give you an example. In 1997, and this was another George Soros thing, his speculation on the Thai currency, the baht, ended up crashing every East Asian currency, with the exception of those currencies controlled by the state. So China was not affected by it. The crash was so severe that the U.S. came in bailing them out and in the process, of course, took over much of their capital. This is what he's talking about here. And I'll guarantee you he's thinking the same thing. He's thinking the exact same process. South Korea is not nearly as economically sovereign as it used to be when the military was in power. We're talking about bailouts here. And we're also talking about the fact that, remember all these guys used to talk about the collapse of the Chinese and Russian economies right around the corner? Remember that? And I said it was nothing but projection. Well, here we go. The Japanese economy is far weaker than we knew. Something much bigger is happening here. The two-year government bond just reached, I think, 1.5%, highest since 95. The era, Japan used to have free money. They even had negative interest rates for a while. So for decades, investors would borrow cheap yen, move that money into U.S. treasuries, stocks, real estate, crypto. That was back, we used to threaten. Remember when Japan was a bad, the Japanese were going to buy us all up. Now borrowing yen is becoming more expensive. Japanese bonds are actually offering meaningful returns domestically. That means Japanese capital doesn't have to stay overseas. That money starts returning to Japan, which I'm sure Japanese nationalists are extremely proud of. Foreign assets are going to get sold. This is the government spent, I don't know what it was back in April. government spent 6.28 trillion yen defending the defending their currency in a single day. In late July, there was another one in American dollars, 95.5 billion in late July. Still collapsed. Intervention is just buying time. You know, it's like trying to the pumps on the Titanic. Yeah, they buy you minutes only. And it doesn't fix the underlying problem of the overvalued assets, the twisted nature of liberal economics. Japan has been suffering from, I think they cook the books just like Americans do, but they've been struggling with high prices. And now the war in Iran, which is, shows you how stupid that decision was, how it impacts the entire world. And that really has spiked the cost of living over there. And just like in America, the Japanese used to be big savers, and I think those days are over. They have a very aging population; they're not growing at all, kind of like South Korea. They're maintaining their racial homogeneity, which is excellent, at least for now. The intervention has had success, but again, it only buys you time. You can't keep doing that forever, and the U.S. is spending money it doesn't have that is borrowed out from elsewhere to prop up a currency that simply is going to collapse anyway. So 200% as the percentage of the debt versus the national wealth is extraordinary. The U.S. is something like 120%, something like that. So this is big. They have no reserves to fall back on. But this author seems to suggest that Bessant has no clue that there's no gold there. I don't know if he's using Bretton Woods symbolically. In other words, American dominion. Bretton Woods came out of American victory in World War II. That's where it came from. And it was able to impose itself on the rest of the world very easily. How is that even remotely possible today? That's something that Donald Trump might be in on. So his degrees are in political science, which in and of itself, not a problem, but not a Secretary of the Treasury. So this is this could be a total disaster, showing just how weak the so-called advanced economies are, as me and you have been saying for at least a decade.
So America's worried that Japan are going to sell off all their treasuries, which are basically debt which they've bought from America. So America is artificially propping Japan up to prevent that from happening. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's a big circle.
Right, I've got you. Getting back to the notes, Trump's fever pitch call highlighting Muslim communists in America is simply a distraction from a collapsing dollar amidst Treasury sell-offs as the power shift gravitates. The common enemy theme was used by Bush to bury the Pentagon and CIA siphoning of American taxpayer funds in the trillions. Bush needed a major distraction. He helped engineer 9/11. Bessant justifying the tariff refunds to big conglomerates who actually benefited over the tariffs in jacked up prices is focusing on giving them cash to buy secure commodities as the dollar and respect for America plunges. While speaking at the International Institute of Finance regarding his Bretton Woods theory, Bessant believes that Bretton Woods made the entire globe financially wealthy and secure. Bretton Woods did not make the world wealthy. It solidified America's power over every other country through America's claim that we had more gold than any other nation. It was that simplistic.
That's not true. That's not true. It was America's victory in World War II and the fact that its economy was not devastated. Its country wasn't devastated by warfare. Not that they had more gold than any other nation. All right, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it says here it was that simplistic. Clearly it wasn't. In 1944, total treasury holds of gold were determined to be 628.4 million troy ounces, per the Treasury Secretary Henry Morgenthau Jr. of Jewish descent. We often hear about Henry Morgenthau Jr., don't we? He was quite an important Jewish figure in World War II and just after. The shipments of gold to Fort Knox from the U.S. Bullion Depository was overseen by the U.S. Post Office Department in the 30s and the 40s. The reserves declared to be in Fort Knox are a quarter of what they were in 1944. Bretton Woods collapsed because there wasn't enough gold to back U.S. dollars, and that was in 1971. What led to the collapse? Well, high inflation, the Federal Reserve playing with rates, Vietnam and public debt have been cited. European countries began to question the hegemony of the US, the value of its word, and its financial transparency. As a result, they began to demand an exchange of their currencies pegged to the dollar for gold, gold that may not have existed. So this is the reason why I think people understand that there is no gold in Fort Knox, because in 1971, other countries started saying, well, we want to exchange our money for gold, and they weren't allowed to. So, I mean, surely he's got to know that there is no gold there. I mean, just because of this fact. I mean, it's been for quite some time that we have known this. I mean, what was the excuses that America gave? You know, when these countries began to demand gold in exchange for their currencies, and they were told they couldn't have any. I mean, what were they told the reason was why they couldn't have any? Do you know?
I remember the German case because it wasn't that long ago. The U.S. simply stonewalled them, coming up with any procedural issue they could. No, we can't. We'll do it later. We can't. You know, you have to pay this debt. You have to pay that debt. You know, whatever they could just to delay. And eventually, the Germans got the idea that their gold was gone, and that was the end of it. You know, there obviously the excuses were minor, procedural. The Germans say, "Could we please have our gold back? We don't trust the U.S. anymore. The U.S. is not the hegemon that it thinks it is, as we know is certainly true today. Let's get our gold out of that cycle, like fractional reserve banking, when everyone wants their money all at once." The most that they were able to do is give them pieces of paper that had the word gold on it, that represents gold. And Germans said, no, you want the actual bars. And the U.S. had to say that they don't exist. It's like the meme from South Park, and it's gone. Coming from the massive debt has sucked all of that out of the country. Debt from the trade deficit, budget deficits, as well as household debts and the full government debt. I mean, you're talking about today trillions of dollars. And you know, something that this author hasn't mentioned is American household debt is as large as the government debt is. So it, you know, that comes to the only conclusion you can have is that Americans technically don't own anything. They owe everything. So it's not always the case, but it occurred, you know, from the 80s onward. It comes from outsourcing and a million other reasons. Saudi Arabia's threat to cut off gold. Cut off oil. There, we don't get much oil from there. Our oil comes from elsewhere, the North Sea, Mexico, et cetera. It doesn't come from Saudi. So you're talking about a very small amount, a symbolic amount. And I don't know what he's talking about here, the Muslim communists in America. I must have missed that one. Is that, I don't know what he's talking about.
Mamdani, is that his name?
In New York City.
New York, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think that's what it is, because they just distraction. They talk about Mamdani and what an anti-Semite he is, and he's communist. It's all a big distraction. Yeah. If you listen to Dr. E. Michael Jones, he says, "Oh, well, he's got some quite good ideas." I mean, they might be anti-white, but I mean, he seems to find something positive in it. But you certainly hear the Republican Party talking about him as he's the big bad bogeyman, and that's obviously to distract from what else is going on, I think.
Yes, and the mayor of New York City is a very powerful figure.
Yeah.
Because he has power over so many, you know, financial institutions, at least indirectly. And people don't realize that, which is why anyone would want that job. I don't know. Why the hell would you want to be mayor of New York City? The minute you're elected, everyone hates you. It's an awful job, but it does have international standing. And, you know, some of the stuff here that 9/11 was to cover over the Pentagon issues. I mean, that's, you know, yeah, that may have been a tiny piece of it. I think the Israelis did 9/11. Bush was aware of it. But, you know, the concept of a distraction, that, you know, for something like that, that only goes so far. There were far bigger issues at work there, you know, especially as far as the Israelis were concerned. And as of where we are here in the notes, the conclusion so far is no one is going to trust either the American system or the Japanese system. Japan used to be a massive player in global affairs, and it's not much anymore. It's been overtaken by China so badly. You know, Japan doesn't have resources. Japan is rocks sticking out of the water. That's what Japan is. That's why it needed Manchuria. That's why it needed the Philippines. That's why it needed, you know, it was a legitimate move that set off World War II. And now that, you know, and they outsource just as heavy as the Americans do. One of the highest suicide rates in the world. Japan, South Korea. You know, it just shows you the fragility of these economies that were predicting every week that Russia and China were going to collapse any moment. And I said it was just projection, and of course I was right.
So America just handed out promissory notes, basically, IOUs, exactly the same as the fiat money system. So instead of handing them over gold, they just handed them over fiat, IOU.
Precisely.
The Iran war would become the most auspicious mistake in recorded history, precipitating the fall of the U.S. economy. Gold has risen 10% since Basant moved on the Bank of Japan a week ago. Bitcoin has followed gold. And I would have to interject there and say Bitcoin is probably at its lowest ever. It's at half what it was. So I read this and I thought, oh, good, Bitcoin's gone up. And I checked and no, it hasn't. So it'd be nice if it does go up, if that is the end result of this, is Bitcoin goes up again, because it's at a very, very low value at the moment. Continuing, the dollar continues its downward trend. Treasuries are backed by faith, not gold. Total amount of federal treasuries outstanding, $40 trillion. Total cash on hand at U.S. banks, $3 trillion, supposedly. All the king's horses claiming the $40 trillion in debt is meaningless are head-in-sand ostrich eggs. Knowing Basant came to the Treasury directly from the Soros fund management, was Soros the one who pushed the Iran war on Trump as the means to execute another Black Wednesday? Does Netanyahu take his orders from Soros, who takes his orders from the Rothschilds? Trump is a goy. He will always be a goy. Soros nominating his number one flunky as our Treasury Secretary is not a coincidence. The Japan crisis is much larger than the media is reporting, likely because they don't understand or haven't researched and are scripted to say what their masters require. While the broke White House continues to lie, Trump is selling $15 billion in weapons inventory to Israel. Basant wants $60 billion to mitigate Japan's near collapse, and tariff rebates ignore the people in favor of friends of Trump. Now, I'm just wondering, why did Trump take this guy on anyway? Because surely Donald Trump is sort of on the other side, on the opposition to George Soros. I mean, Donald Trump was seen as getting rid of the swamp and obviously against Soros. So why is he taking on somebody from Soros fund management? Why does he go from George Soros directly to Trump's team? This just doesn't make sense to me. Why was it not pointed out before that Donald Trump was taking on people from George Soros? I mean, is this did he know this, Matt? Has this been talked about before?
He had to have known this. when he was accepted by the Senate in those hearings, which I did not watch. You know, of course, we weren't allowed to talk about it because they'd be anti-Semites then. Who knows if Soros made promises to Donald Trump on an economic level? But yes, it doesn't. You're right. It doesn't make sense. And as I said, when he was first elected in 2016, I said, well, you know, God, I grew up with this guy in the news every day in the New York area. He never uttered a political syllable ever. He was a political guy on the news almost every day doing something. And now he's taking on the presidency of the U.S. Domestic policy, maybe. But international political economy, that's a highly specialized field. He's probably going to do what he's told. Now, maybe it's overstating it to say it's the most auspicious mistake in recorded history, but it was a massive mistake. Now, any bailout, the Japanese economy, trying to save the yen, that means more Japanese assets will be owned by the U.S. Not the U.S. taxpayer, not the U.S. government, by investors, whoever they may be. And he's right. Dollar is backed by faith. What happens when that faith starts to be shaken, which it has been many times? $40 trillion outstanding versus allegedly $3 trillion. I think it's much lower than that. I think he's right to say supposedly. You know, the level of debt means right now that it's Social Security and debt service that are the two biggest areas in the budget. I thought it was debt service was the number one, paying interest. No, Social Security is slightly higher, but now they're probably about equal. Very soon they're just going to be higher. It's going to be the number one item in the budget. And it's going to start eating its way through all discretionary spending. Now, I don't know. Does Netanyahu take orders from Soros? I don't know. He doesn't mention BlackRock in here, which is a huge mistake. Trump is a goy. He will always be a goy. You know, I was very impressed when I learned about the Jewish issue in college that he made his money in New York City real estate, heavily regulated, heavily Jewish, as a non-Jew. He knows Jews very well. And I was surprised by the attitude he took towards them later on. It is much larger than the media is reporting. Reporters don't know the first thing about this kind of thing. And in the meantime, Trump is selling billions to selling probably, you know, half the market rate of weapons inventory that it doesn't have itself to the Israelis, what's left of Israel. $60 billion, that's just the beginning to mitigate Japan's near collapse. Japan was supposed to be this stable economy. That was the country that's going to, you know, the Chinese would threaten to dump American debt on the market and hence crash the dollar. Japan was buying it back up again. That was Japan's role. It's not going to be that way anymore. So what does that mean? That means China has that much more power. Russia has that much more power. The two of them own a huge chunk of American debt, or, you know, bought it from other investors over the years. They're just that much more powerful if Japan is not in a position to do this. And they're not anymore. At the same time, the U.S. then gets to kind of colonize parts of Japan, since this is really, it comes down to a simple bailout. But a bailout, this is not going to last. Nothing's going to change with this. Again, it's like putting the pumps on the Titanic. They may buy you a few minutes, but that's it. It's going to go down either way.
Well, as I always say, that you are always going to get this with a system that is based on usury. I mean, that's right at the heart of this, right at the heart of our economic system is usury. And the interest just doesn't exist. It has to come from somewhere. And the only way you can get it from is more debt. So you end up with massive ballooning debt that is continually expanding until you end up with countries like America being the richest country in the world with all the things that it's created. And yet somehow it's trillions and trillions of dollars in debt. And it's down to usury. And all the time you're going to get countries like Japan that end up being the fall guy, that end up having to be propped up, the same as we had the crash over here in Britain. I think it was in 2008. You had this, you keep getting crashes and countries collapsing. And basically it's because of this globalized debt problem. And until they address the problem of usury at the heart of the system, you're going to continue to get problems like this. Continuing to concentrate on this particular news story, I think we have a different source.
Forbes,
this is our new source now. The wobbling Japanese yen could trigger a global financial crisis. The yen recently reached a 40-year low against the dollar. The fear is that a further fall in the currency's value will precipitate a crisis of confidence that will not only set off a serious bout of inflation inside Japan, but also adversely impact financial markets around the world. That's why the United States and Japan both used dollars to buy the yen. The intervention has had success. However, most experts believe the relief will be short-lived because of adverse fundamentals in Japan. A too low short-term interest rate, which is 1% versus around 3.5% in the US, a national debt that is proportionately twice that of the US, rising energy prices, and a declining and aging population. The immediate worry for US Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent is that in an effort to save the yen from collapse, Japan will start liquidating its $1.1 trillion portfolio of Treasury bonds and bills, not to mention its holdings of German and British bonds. Such sales would put pressure on interest rates. After all, financing our immense budget deficits and refinancing some $7 trillion of our existing debt that's coming up for renewal. This anxiety, for instance, is why the interest rate on our 30-year Treasury bond has reached its highest level in almost 20 years. Bessent wants the Federal Reserve to beef up a facility it created in 2020 to deal with a dollar shortage caused by the pandemic and use it now to help the yen. He could also employ a Depression-era facility called the Exchange Stabilization Fund. The idea is that through these devices, Japan could borrow dollars using its treasury holdings as collateral. This help is nice, but there are better, more immediate ways to deal with the crisis. Japan should boost its utterly unrealistic short-term interest rate. Another important thing that both the US and Japan should do is to announce that they want a stable rate between the dollar and the yen. They might even give a range of, say, 150 to 155 yen to the dollar and make clear that the two countries would massively intervene in the exchange markets to keep it there. Japan would, if necessary, reduce the supply of yen to keep it in that range, and these steps would quash the immediate crisis. Do you think those steps would actually solve this problem, Matt, or do you think there's another way that they could do it?
No. And I think what you said before was precisely correct. It's the same thing that I say. E. Michael Jones says, that Paul Craig Roberts says, the system is based on debt, i.e. usury, based on rent seeking, of which, you know, rent seeking is an aspect of usury. This is what you're going to get. And the way and how you put it was perfect. He wants to create something called the Foreign International Monetary Authority's repo facility, or FIMA. Well, it still has to be funded by somebody. Japan can borrow using the treasury holdings as collateral. Well, you know, what happens if they eventually, you know, can't pay it? And they're in a position that, you know, I don't know how that's going to help the collapse of the yen over time. And he says, yeah, that's not really going to last. But when you have eventually, the Japanese are going to have no choice but to dump its dollars. That is to say, its debt. And how bizarre and almost ironic it would be that the country that was supposed to save the U.S. from its debt by buying it up when the Chinese were dumping it on the market, now themselves have to dump it, which would put the U.S. economy would go into a tailspin. I don't know how the media would deal with that. They certainly would lie about it. The U.S. has been in a depression since 2008. There's been no real recovery. The U.S., especially the postmodern media, has created a situation where you could be in a depression and not know it. Crisis of confidence is a huge deal. This is a psychological matter. The last thing that Japan needs is another bout of inflation with substantially rising prices. But he says, Steve Forbes himself. I can't believe I'm agreeing with him on something, but he says the relief will be short-lived because there's fundamental issues. Now, he doesn't grasp the fundamental issues. He's not going to talk about usury. He's going to talk about more technical matters. Japan has no tools to pay down its debt, just like the U.S. does. Rising energy prices, well, that's largely gouging from the oil companies. Although in the Japanese case, they are actually getting oil from the Middle East. And people often overlook, and he's right to say it, a declining and aging population. I think they're one of the worst in the world in that department, along with South Korea. You know, seeing a high IQ population go down like this is nothing to cheer about. So if Japan begins to liquidate, it's what he says here, at least $1 trillion in treasury bonds. Not to mention, he says, on the German, British bonds, anyone else with debt that Japan has bought up, that is going to create massive inflation in the U.S. And there's really, the U.S. doesn't have any tools to work with this. You can't have a debt the size of the U.S. household, trade, and government. God, no, that number is massive. It's like about 17 trillion times two, because the household debt is about the same as government debt. How are they going to do this? And where are they going to get the cash from? Where are they going to borrow it from? You know, the Chinese used to be more than happy to to buy treasury bills and loan U.S. money. But I don't know, not after the war in Iran. Fact is, China doesn't need the U.S. Doesn't need the U.S. market. Doesn't need U.S. money. China is the number one GDP in the world, both in purchasing power parity as well as nominal terms, and has been for a while, because they actually make things. The U.S. considers, you know, a financial instrument economic growth. The Chinese don't. So he could talk all he wants about all these names, you know, Foreign International Monetary Alliance, but he could mention all of this, acting like he's doing something. There still has some money to go into it. And it's odd that Steve Forbes is talking about this massive intervention. I thought he liked this free market. I thought he supported the private sector. No, free market is dead. These are all government mandated at the most fundamental level. So I guess the free market doesn't work. These are all state and treasury matters. You know, I don't think he's realized the implications of what he's talking about here. So, as I said before, you know, borrowing in yen becomes more expensive. Japanese bonds then actually are offering returns at home. So Japan doesn't need the U.S. You know, this is a huge problem. And the one country that was buying American, I don't think any other country has the capability, but Japan was struggling to buy. It's part of why it's so deep in debt, to buy American debt. They can't do it anymore, and it may be liquidating it. And I could see Putin and Xi with popcorn watching all this take place. Oh, I suppose we're not going to collapse anytime soon, are we? As I've said, every move, anything these guys are talking about devalues the dollar. And don't forget, a lost war destroys the reputation of a country. That's a psychological issue. A lost war always, and there's another issue that these guys don't talk about, stealing the Russian assets. That's a huge problem. Other countries, I mean, the Saudis, a whole bunch of others were really worried about this. They could do it for the Russians, then why can't they do it to us? And this really destroyed the American reputation abroad. It's more of a gang than any kind of a law-bound society. Trying to, and they still haven't really done it, but trying to, they've frozen it, but they haven't taken it. Announcing that they're going to steal Russian assets in Western Bank, that terrified people. So all these put together show, and I've been saying this for God knows how long, long before that happened, show the weakness of the Western economy, show weakness of any economy based on usury. Now it's time to pay the piper. And unfortunately, me and you, those living in Western countries, are going to have to suffer.
Well, getting back to our Ford's citation, a cratering yen has set off alarms on Wall Street and in financial centers around the world. If the Bank of Japan sells its behemoth stockpile U.S. treasuries, now exceeding $1.2 trillion, to support its sagging currency, the U.S. bond market could go into a nosedive, dragging the global economy off a cliff. That is why on Friday, July 31st, U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent launched an unprecedented currency intervention to prop up the anemic yen and to forestall an impending financial meltdown. Surprisingly, Bessent implemented a euros for yen trade via the New York Fed so as not to weaken the dollar or trigger a sell-off in bonds. The gravity of the intervention, however, was not lost on jumpy investors who have connected the dots and understand that America's $40 trillion debt Ponzi is growing increasingly unstable and could trigger another financial crisis. In short, the teetering yen is merely the canary in the coal mine, signaling deeper structural issues that could take down the entire dollar-based house of cards. The United States and Japan are already massively meddling in the market to scare off short sellers who don't think market fundamentals support a strong yen. In effect, Bessent is saying that if they bet against the yen, they will be crushed by the combined firepower of the Fed and its ally in Japan. In other words, anyone who invests believing that the market is free and fair will be clobbered. Second, the facility to which Forbes refers is another Fed-generated bailout outfit similar to ones created during the Great Financial Crisis. It is called the Foreign and International Monetary Authority's Repo Facility, or FEMA, which is operated through the Federal Reserve Bank of New York to help prop up the yen with dollar loans in order to discourage Japan from dumping its US debt. Simply put, it is a bailout facility. The Fed is issuing dollar-backed loans to prevent the market from rebalancing and to avoid a catastrophic sell-off of US debt that could put the global financial system into a downwards death spiral. Well, I do have to say, we quite often do hear about how it is impending doom and that the whole economy is going to collapse and America is going to collapse. And we have been hearing it for quite some time now. So I don't know if this is actually going to result in the death spiral, as it says here, or whether they will pull themselves out of it. And I don't know which one to hope for, really. I mean, there's positives that can be got from both. I mean, there's positives that can be got from the end of the American empire, but also that could be quite harsh on the American citizens and on the rest of the world. And if it continues, then we still have a chance to tinker around the edges, I guess. That's the way that I would look at this. What are your final thoughts on this today, Matt?
Yeah, I'm sorry. There was a separation. The Forbes article, at least the part that I used, ended with the phrase a sell-off in bonds. An article by Mike Whitney started in the gravity of the intervention. Because he was, Forbes would never use words like Ponzi or anything else. But if Japan were to dump treasuries onto the market and the supply of them were to grow, that means bond yields or loan yields would rise. That would, in turn, push up interest rates, driving up the federal government's debt payments, and even the cost of things, everything from mortgage to car loans. It would be utterly catastrophic, maybe not the end of all things, but you're talking about a Great Depression, even though the U.S. has been in a depression. It'll be in a tremendous depression that even the media can't lie about at this point. Yeah, you're right. People have been talking about the collapse of the U.S. The major media talks about the collapse of Russia and China, even though Russia and China are far more stable economically than the U.S. is, as this proves. They're both creditor nations. Russia's debt over the war is short-term, not long-term. They are overloaded with gold. And at least, you know, in Russia, they have a very, very popular president. That matters as far as economics is concerned. But the concept of, you think the market actually works in any of this stuff? It doesn't. And this just makes it even worse. Yes, it's going to be one more bailout that the U.S. has absolutely no money to pull off. Japanese will eventually end up selling its treasuries onto the market, and you're going to have an inflation spike in the U.S. And I think it'll be a situation where the media can't lie about it anymore.
It certainly does show that the idea that there is a free market is a complete myth, if anything at all. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.